Testing.
All right, is this working? Testing. Okay, hello. Hello, can you hear me? Hello? Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you well.
Okay, great. Sorry, I was having some technical issues for a minute.
Oh,
it looks
no
like
problem.
Looks like we're up and running now, though. So.
All right. Good deal.
All right. So you ready to get started?
I'm ready. Yes, I am.
All right. Let's do it. So, welcome to episode 6 of Tripolar. I'm your host, Nico Minetti. My guest today is Master Li, a Kung Fu master. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. How about yourself, Nico?
Doing great. I'm excited for today's episode. It's going to be really interesting. So, Master Li is one of he's the type of guest where it's going to be difficult for me to package exactly what I'm going to say today because there's so much we could get into. We're dealing with a very interesting individual here. I've kind of decided how we're going to approach it. So I'm going to tell you a story really quick that's completely true. And it's very dramatic seeming because it is very dramatic. And while I am a dramatic person, this is something to be dramatic about. I almost killed a guy last week. And that's not something I ever thought I would, be casually saying. But I literally came closer than I ever have and maybe ever will to murdering another human being. The way this came about was I came home from work very late at night and got to my house and I noticed some headlights that looked like they were coming from the backyard or behind my house, which of course didn't make sense. Why would there be a car back there? There's not even a road. I knew my family was out of town except for my mother. So my mom was home alone. And now I just know that there's a stranger's vehicle there. So I turn off my headlights, drive around the house, make sure that what I'm seeing is real. And sure enough, there's a pickup truck parked, running, lights on, facing the woods. Facing like a path that's behind my dad has this weird kind of hobby of building paths. So it was facing this path. Now I start thinking best case scenario, there's a lost pet or something and he's trying to find it. I don't know. Worst case scenario, my mom's dead. Someone's raping her. I'm a worst case scenario thinker. So I call the cops right away. I've called the cops over much lesser things. But so I call them. I tell them, like, hey, there's this truck outside my house. I'm about to go in. My mom's there alone. Send some cops, you know? And so they do. Long story short, I get to the door. The back door is cracked open. So this makes things a lot worse. I'm thinking there's someone in here. All I have is this little stun gun, which, is a little threatening, but not enough to deal with someone with a gun or whatever is awaiting me inside. But I go in, and the alarm goes off, which is a good sign, because that means there's probably no one in there so far. So I turn it off, and then I go in. My mom's okay, right? But I look out the window, and sure enough, this truck's still there. The cops finally arrive about 10 minutes later, and in the meantime, I had gotten a shotgun. I'm not very handy with shotguns, but I knew where one was, and I loaded it, and I had it ready to go. And I decided to stay in the house and wait for the police to arrive. When they did, the first cop on the scene approached the car, and a guy came out of it, a big guy, who was screaming, "Fuck you!" and attacking the cop. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. The guy was obviously completely out of his mind because he's attacking a police officer. And the cop did not shoot him. I'm shocked. I thought for sure this guy would be killed because I've seen cops kill people over much less, provocation. You can look on YouTube and see him shoot people over all kinds of bullshit. But this guy, he could have shot him. I was taping it. I should include some of the video online so you know I'm not making this up. But the other cops arrive. They eventually subdue the guy, arrest him. I look through his truck with the cops. We find a bunch of beer cans, Xanax, all these like identifying factors. I won't get too deep into that because that's not really the focus of this episode. But the fact of the matter is, I was confronted with a very real, very dangerous situation that unfolded in a way that you wouldn't expect to happen. No one thinks they're going to come home to someone who's a violent, drunk, what you name it, person, literally just in their backyard. And after things kind of calmed down and the cops took the guy away and they towed the truck away and everything was back to normal, I found myself kind of pacing around the house, upset. And I wasn't so much upset because, I don't know, I wasn't upset because of what had happened. I was, for some reason, upset at myself for not going to the scene before the police arrived. Part of me, and it's a dark part of me, but I'm going to share this with you because I said that I want this show to be real. And I want to talk about things that don't get talked about. But part of me wished I would have killed the guy. And I felt this, I guess, disappointment in myself for not confronting the man, myself, and defending myself if he would have come out and done the same thing he did with the cops, which I'm sure he most likely would have. And I would have killed him, I would have shot him, and I wouldn't have felt bad. But what was weird was not just that I wouldn't have felt bad if I had had to kill him. What was weird was that I wanted to kill him, that I wished I had for some reason, right? The next day, I felt differently. I was glad that I hadn't killed the guy. I don't know all the details of the situation. Maybe I will in time, but in retrospect, there was no need to resort to that level of violence. And I think that what I felt was a frustration because I was powerless to prevent this guy from putting my mother in danger. To come home and find that a person's worst fear maybe could have been realized, like a home invasion, you know, my mother, whatever, you name it. My powerlessness to prevent that from occurring, that sense of violation made me wish that I had maybe gotten retribution. And I know I would have gotten away with it and that it would have been justified self-defense. I'm sure I would have been okay, legally speaking, given the circumstances. And the next day, I'm sorry, that day, earlier that day, I had met my guest today, Master Lee. And we met kind of through coincidence, and we had a very long, very interesting conversation about his life and about Kung Fu, which is the art the martial art he practices and that he's been practicing for over 3 decades, almost 4 decades. And we talked about this whole idea that he just teaches self-defense. And the impression I got from my talk with him was that, to him, defense is almost a virtue, evasiveness. He only teaches his students to defend. There is no offensive component to anything he teaches. And he built up this persona that I thought had to be bullshit, because I'm a skeptical person. But he was telling me in like 30 years he's never been hit, and that he's essentially like a like a mythical figure that this guy just can't be touched. And you'll hear when he talks about it, I thought that there's no way that this guy's a legend in his own mind, and I have to see it for myself. And I'm happy to say that it doesn't seem like bullshit anymore. I went to one of his classes, and he let me just try to attack him. And, I wasn't, it was weird because even though he wasn't trying to hurt me, and maybe I wasn't really trying to hurt him, I totally got the impression this guy could whoop my ass. This guy could whoop the ass of probably anyone I've ever met, because the way he approaches it is menacing. The guy just stands there smiling, and no matter what you do, it's like it within a second, literally within like a second, he's got you in a position where he could have just broke your windpipe or gouged your eye out, or, you know, and just the force and strength and almost, you know, fluid movement. What he's able to do, it's hard to describe just through words, but it's very subtle, but it's very powerful. I never experienced anything like that. And I'll let him talk about it himself because he could probably explain it better than me. But the connection I made was that my interaction with this guy sank in the next day. And what he said made sense, because his philosophy is that you only use lethal violence when absolutely necessary. And if I'm honest with myself, it was not absolutely necessary to confront the guy, which I didn't, and I'm glad I didn't now. It wouldn't have even been necessary for me to shoot him if he was walking towards my house. I mean, we could have ran. There's a number of things that we could have done if the only issue at play here was needing to protect my mom and my own life. But my instincts told me this guy had it coming. I could have and maybe should have killed him. And now, but when I took into account everything Master Lee had talked to me about in that sank in, I realized that the way I was looking at it was perhaps not the best way. And it's a way that inspires a cycle of violence. And we discussed this idea that violence comes from fear, and that all violence is either retribution for violence that's already been received, or a preemptive strike to prevent violence that we're afraid of occurring. And so I know there's a lot to try to unpack in a really brief episode, but I want to kind of turn it over to Master Lee here. I haven't even let him talk at all. To let you get a feel for who this guy is and what the hell I'm talking about. So, Master Lee, why don't you kind of just introduce yourself a little and tell me, like, what your whole stance on this is.
Okay. Well, my name is Robert Lee McPhail. I go by Lee. I've been training for 37 years, and my philosophy is really, really kind of simple. You know, you can never lose a fight if you don't get hit. That's number one. And defense carries a greater priority. And when you're young, kicking and punching is fun. But as you get older and you're training, you realize that there is so much value in defending yourself. So what most schools do, they teach students how to kick and punch and kick and punch and kick and punch. Well, what I've done is teach students how not to use their power, are not to use their offense in order to cultivate good defensive skills. Now, this defensive mindset cultivates and grows, not just in the school, but outside the school. Now, in the school, you probably say, well, how is this standard? What's the difference? How is it different? Well, for example, MMA, very, very controversial. Everybody gets excited about it, but the reality of it is this. They're fighting on a padded floor. In my school, we have concrete floors. They're hitting pads that are soft with gloves and protection on their hands. In our school, we hit telephone poles and call wooden dummies and sandbags. our school does not teach the sport. Our number one goal is to live. That's number one. Number two, we don't want to hurt people. But in my 37 years, I've seen a lot, and I've fought many people, many masses, and the reason why I think my father has blessed me with this skill is because I came into it not to learn how to fight. I came into it sick. I mean, here I am, 19 years old. I mean, 18 years old, I'm going to play basketball in Indiana State. That's where I went to college at. And I, you know, played college ball there and played a year of pro. But when I went to college, I went up for a dunk, came down on my tailbone and got a tumor. And they had to cut me from my thigh all the way up, you know. And now, can you imagine going to college with a rubber balloon, talking about, you know, having to go to class and sit on it and, you know, and be laughed at, you know, and
right.
Your booty hurt. So,
yeah, to go from being a basketball star to that.
Yeah, from a hometown hero to a hometown football. Yeah, a reality check. It made me realize that basketball wasn't going to last forever, and it had a drop-off point. Well, I didn't understand it then. I only wanted to do kung fu so I could get my health back, so I could play basketball, you know?
And okay, let me tell the audience something that I did a bad job explaining. So when I said his Master Lee, like you said, his name's Robert Lee, and he's a black guy. He's a big black guy. He looks kind of like Samuel L. Jackson, right? It's such an anomaly that there's a guy that looks like him and looks like he, the last thing you would expect is that this guy has dedicated his life to an ancient Chinese, martial art. But he's such an interesting guy because it seems like a joke or it seems like a gimmick, you know? But when you see this guy in action and when you're actually present with him, you really get the feeling that I'm amidst something I haven't been around before. This guy understands something about just the universe, I almost want to say, that makes me at least feel like I couldn't hurt this guy. I feel like this guy could take on probably anyone I know. And you were trained, right, by like a little Chinese guy. So can you explain how the hell that happens, that you, like a little Chinese guy, while you're injured from basketball, teaches you? And like, where did he come from? Like, what's going on?
Well, my teacher from Hong Kong, he was sent here by their government to get his master's degree. And so when I went to Indiana State, you know, just to give you an example, I went there in the summer and played basketball all summer. Then I went home on the bi-state for a weekend. Had this bump, you know, had this knot on my butt, and I thought, well, it'll go away. Well, it went from 1 week to 2 weeks and then to an operation. So when I got to the United States, you know, I used to get stand flat-footed and do a 360 dunk. Then all of a sudden, I got this operation, and I couldn't touch the net. So I was looking for a way to get myself healthy, and the doctors couldn't help me. So everybody was telling me about this kung fu man on campus. Now, this guy is 5 foot 414 pounds. And everybody was telling me how tough, I'm from St. Louis. You know, there couldn't be a ghetto. I didn't believe that nobody that small could fight. So I finally found them one day, but I found them on a corridor on a dormitory. It's like a 12-story dormitory. And I come to find out that I was living on the 12th floor, and he was living on the 4th floor. So one day I was going up
neighbor.
The stairs. Yeah, we were neighbors.
What was the word going around? Like, how would you? What was this guy's reputation? Was it that he had gotten in some scuffles locally, or like how did people know he was a good fighter?
Well, when he came to Indiana State. There, you know, most colleges have fraternity. They have fraternity
right.
parties. Well, one night he was coming home, and these fraternity guys got out of their car and they started making fun and taunting him. Well, one guy.
And what year is this? What year is this?
This is 1980. 1980.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just so want to give people a reference for, so they can visualize.
Yeah, I'm an old man. Okay, very old, but God has been good to me. But anyway, he gets out of the. These guys get out the car and they confront him. But one guy reached out to grab him, and my teacher kicked his knee, and he kicked his kneecap around his side of his leg. He kicked his leg so hard, his kneecap, the top of that little top bone, was kicked to the mm-hmm. outside of his leg. And he couldn't even walk. This is a 114-pound man. So the frat guys, they got nervous. They got up in the car, they put this boy up and got in the car and took off. So that went around the whole campus. I couldn't believe it. So I said, no, I'm from the Show Me State. I don't believe that. So anyway, I met him on the dormitory steps, and I was going up to from dinner. He was coming down to go to the dinner. And I looked at him. I said, are you that kung fu guy that they've been talking about? You know martial arts? He said, no, I don't know martial arts. And I thought to myself, I'm like, oh, yes, you are. You the one. So I did something I thought would excite him. I said, well, I know Taekwondo. And that his eyes gleamed. I'm like, oh, no, what the heck I do? There's nobody on these stairs.
So you kind of challenged him, Mike.
Yeah, I challenged him. And he said, throw punch. I threw the punch and it was like a machine gun. I didn't see nothing. He just hit me over and over and over again. I got to my dormitory room. I looked at my body and I had fingerprints from his hand strike. He didn't break any bones. But he
That was the same day that you met him?
That was the same day. That very same
And so
day.
How did that come about? Were you just like, hey, let's spar? Or like, how did that go from, hey, you're that Chinese guy who beats people up to like, let's fight?
Well, see, I've always had a fascination with martial arts. Basketball, I was good at, but I didn't like it. I did it because it paid my rent. I did it because it provided food, but I really didn't like it. I always loved martial arts. But basketball, like I said, it got me a college education. So when I heard of this, I was fascinated, not only because this man who's fighting had power, but the fact that he was legitimate. There was no flash, no sales ticket or nothing. He was just legitimate. He come from the old method where the teacher has number one student, number two student, no ranking, and his goal was to beat you. He wanted to make sure that, the weak ones will leave. He didn't want to teach anyway because we weren't paying him. So as a result, he didn't want to take time with the ones that were weak. So when he fought us, he slapped us, he beat us. But only the strong survived. So there's only a few of us that survived.
Well, and that's I watched a documentary on Kung Fu the other night to kind of understand it better. And by the way, I'm planning on taking his class because I found it so fascinating. But, yeah, apparently Kung Fu, it was developed hundreds, if not thousands of years ago in China as a means, if I'm remembering this correctly, as a means to protect these kind of temples from like shifting political groups in China. So they developed these fighting techniques to guard these temples, basically. And that got passed on from generation to generation. And evolved into what was like a very unique and kind of spiritual lifestyle, it sounded like. And then it's something that they passed on kind of from generation to generation. And it was like a fraternal thing where it's like you had to really prove your worth, kind of like what you're saying, to like in the Karate Kid, basically. Like to sum it up, it's like the Karate Kid.
Yeah. In other words, you just wouldn't know, okay, I'll pay you and you teach me. It was not like that. Kung Fu back then was serious. The teachers valued their
It's almost like a religion to these guys, right?
It was more like a, I wouldn't say religion. I would say it was a philosophy of morality.
Right. But it's something they take as seriously as like it's a foundation of their life, right?
Yes, that's the key. In other words, it becomes your identity. It becomes who you are, not what you do.
Okay.
So you came to
train with him, and
yeah.
What did he teach you? Like, what was the main takeaway from what you underwent with him?
The main thing I learned from him was how to stop a punt. Wing Chun is basically about ending the fight quickly. So what he taught me was, you know, defense, how to counter quick. My teacher's small. He could not take a blow. So his defenses were very, very strong. So therefore, when you made a mistake, he wasn't punching you in your belly. He was grabbing your testicles. You can only make the one mistake. He would defend and defend. You make one mistake, he grab your wee wee and you scream like a pig.
Right,
that's probably
why. And we were kind of discussing this the other day. That Kung Fu hasn't really gone mainstream like MMA or Taekwondo or these other places that have these big schools. And I think it's because it's not something you can have fun with. Like, you know, it's not something you can have tournaments of, and you can. It's not something flashy. It's just, you know, you're not going to send your kid to a thing where they grab each other's balls. You know, it's something that's, it's a very serious, like, we're training to be able to prevent ourselves from being killed type of thing.
Yeah. And see, that sounds vicious, but martial arts
right.
has evolved to such a sport now. Give you an example, an MMA match. You see rules. You see a soft floor. You see pads on their hands. You see referees. You see doctors. You got 25 rules. Well, people come to my school. They don't come anymore. But with the first 10 years I was in Raytown, I had challenges weekly. Weekly. And what I found out, that these guys had no defense. Yeah, they had good punches and good kicks. But what happens if you miss that good punch and kick? Against a fighter who spends hours and hours and hours on defense versus a fighter who spends hours and hours on trying to strike. So when these guys would come in to strike me, I would ask them simple, what technical you want me to grab, your right one or your left? I know that sounds vicious, but, you know, when you come outside of Walmart and somebody asks you for your wallet, it's a matter of your life or his. So why teach people how to kick bags and punch each other 1,000 times when in the real world you're not going to have 1,000 punches? In the real world, there won't be no preparation or announcement. They're not going to be a padded floor of rules. I fight on concrete because it's simple. When you step on the floor with a man and there's no rules, the fight is not the same. It's not the same. And unless you have fought this way, you don't have the ability to adjust. Your fear will kick in. Well, I started teaching in the ghetto. I started teaching not because I wanted to be a teacher. I started teaching because I loved it. It's passionate. And when I taught kids that were being victimized, you know, mistreated from that, and I taught them free. But it gave me such a feeling of gratitude,
vocation.
I felt joy. It felt peace. So I just kept doing it. And everywhere I went, I taught Kung Fu. People laughed at me. They called me Bruce Leroy, Ninja Man, you name it. But I watched these people. I know they called me all kind of names, but I kept on doing it. I kept on doing it. I got laughed at. And then I started working community centers. Well, guess how I got into a community center? Well, I had I got a little part-time job after college, and I started working in the community center in the worst part of St. Louis. So I'm open up the first day. On the first day of opening up, this is a community center in St. Louis, right across.
Can you hear me? Hello? Shit. Hello, hello? Can you hear me? It cut out there for a couple seconds. We couldn't hear you for a little while. But you started teaching at the community center, and then you were explaining how you got that position.
Yes. In the community centers, it was a community center where there was just poverty. Nobody had programs, and kids ran around. The teenager was selling drugs in the community center. It was just not, it was not being used. So I went in there, and I started setting up a program. Well, when I started setting up these programs, the drug dealers got mad at me. First thing they did, they took the bolts off my van. So when I got ready to go home and hit the highway, my wheels would fall off. Well, God protected me. They didn't fall off. God said, okay, turn and get some gas. When I turned to get the gas before the highway, my vehicle fell on its belly. So, you know, they thought that would deter me. And it didn't. It didn't. What I was trying to do is get these kids off the street and get them in a community center where they can play basketball and sports. You know, all I asked was 2 hours. These guys would run
this.
This is St. Louis, yes. This was in St. Louis.
Yeah, in St. Louis. By the way, for the listeners, because we're probably going to have people listening to this for like all over the world who don't know what the hell St. Louis is. It's a city in Missouri that is known, is very well known for being dangerous even till today. One of the most dangerous cities in America in terms of the violence. And think like Detroit. It's like the same kind of idea. It's mostly black people live there. It is a lot of poverty and a lot of violence. And it's, to my understanding, generally associated with, like you said, like the drug trade.
There it is. So imagine being a black man in the ghetto teaching kung fu. Well, everyone wanted to show me that kung fu stuff don't work. So after that didn't work. One day I was in my, I told the guys that they can, you know, the kids will have the community center from 5 to 7. At 7 o'clock, y'all come in. Well, one of the gang leaders decided, he was an older head. He decided, well, no, we ain't operating that way. So I'm in the gym. I come out down the hallway. He's coming towards me. And he thought I was getting ready to confront him.
You get into this, because I really want to hear the story, but why did they want to stop you? Like, what was this doing to hurt business? Or was it that you were taking people away that were working from them, keeping them off drugs? Like, what was it that you were, why were you a thorn in their side?
Well, see, what I upset them is that they used to come inside the community centers, play basketball, drink, sell their drugs, while the kids would run around outside in the street around the community center with 90-degree weather.
Oh, so they basically would take over the community center.
They took over the community center. They didn't want, I started trying to put some boundaries, yeah, I became a target. So this one gang leader came to, he wanted to, check me, I guess what you say, confront me. Well, and I came down the hallway, he had his gun on. And he was, what you want? You know, I said, well, I'm just trying to do my job. I said, no, it ain't worth getting a dying over. You want to go to the gym? Go ahead. Go on to the gym. And I'll be back. And I'm like, okay. Now, I'm at that point now where I got three babies at home. And I had, three kids at that time. And I had a part-time job. And I had, it was tough buying Pampers. And I needed this job. And I prayed and I said, Lord, I got to deal with this. And the Lord told me when he comes back, right before we opened up, all the drug dealers would go into the bathroom and, do they do. So the Lord told me to go in there and confront this guy in front of all his people. So I go in there, I say, sir, can I talk to you? So, yeah, I see he had his gun on still. He said, yeah. So I know he was going to say no. So I go in my office.
Right.
And as we walk into his office, I trapped him behind the door. He comes in, I open the door. He goes between the desk and the wall. And behind the door. So I just told him very simply, I said, sir, I got babies to feed and I need this job and I'm not going to be bullied or punked. So now, if you got a problem with me, you got your gun right on your hip right now. Let's do this, because I ain't going to be nobody's punk and I'm not going to be, worried about trying to feed my kids. So if you want to kill me, this is your time. You got your gun, go for it. Well, he decided he didn't want to do that. He shook my hand, and from that moment forward, he understood, because those same kids that was running around the community center was their cousins, was their nephews. Mm. So after a while, they started to appreciate my presence. But it still wasn't enough, because St. Louis is full of gangs, full of violence. Drive-bys wasn't nothing. The people got killed in my high school. So anyway, the different gangs heard about me and my fighting, because I got jumped on by 10 people. And I beat them without hurting them. I mean, I put some in a position where they could die.
Let's not gloss over that. How did you beat 10 people up? Like, why? What was that like?
Well, see, it was not, you know, when people say fight, most people visualize blood and guts. But right. What happened is, I'm in the community center, and these guys are, like, jumping on this guy. And I'm like, hold up. They were fighting up a basketball game. So I went to break them up. So they circled me. And at that time, they were called, you know, every game, every neighborhood had their different games. That was before the Bloods and the Crips. Well, they circled me. And one of their guys, you know, came at me from behind and tried to strike me. I turned, and I palmed his face. It didn't hurt him, but it made his nose swell a little bit. So after that, the number one technique of a gang attack is they always have a shooter. And a shooter in a gang attack is a person who goes in and attacks the legs. He goes in to do one thing to take him down. Well, one guy came in to rush me, to take me down. I stepped back, picked my foot up. His head slid under my foot. I stomped an inch before his nose and hit the floor so hard that his head bounced up. They all were so frightened, they were done. See, when I say fighting, why do I have to, if I can take my hand and put it on your throat, why do I have to kill you? Why do I have to crush your throat? Why do I have to hurt you? If I can show you in slow motion or in gently that you can die, why do I have to shed blood? Well, most people who've been fighting understands that. It's called mercy. Mercy. Mm-hmm. I spared that kid, but he was the different kid, and that gang was different. But the worst got out. It got out. So I realized that I had
this is going to be pretty amazing. What you just described, I think, was kind of what I wanted to get at. You realize you have the presence of mind to think so many steps ahead in a situation like that, where for most people it would just be instincts. You're thinking ahead. You're thinking, instead of stomping on this guy's face, I'm going to scare him and send a message that I could have just done that. And in doing so, you're gaining respect because you had the opportunity to pull the trigger and you put the gun away, you know?
And
that to me is really interesting because, you know, like what I was feeling, that I want to kill this guy. That's your natural instinct that everyone has.
Yeah.
And when you act on that instinct, the other person has the same instinct. So it's this constant back and forth. It's like a game of Pong where you're just throwing the violence back and forth.
Right. But
if someone catches that ball... You know, if someone catches that violence, right, instead of letting it bounce back and they defuse it and put it down, why would they throw another ball? Now they're thinking, whoa, this seems weird.
Now,
why didn't he hurt me?
So there's a code on the street, and that is that in the ghetto, you hurt somebody, they're not going to fight you. They go home, get their gun, and they come back and shoot you. So I didn't have any options. Either I had to learn how to fight and not hurt people. It got so deep that every gang, majority of the gangs in Missouri were sending their gang leaders to the community center. Now imagine you got five guys circling you, and three of those guys got their hand on their gun. And then they got their heavy hitter in the middle talking about, now you fight him. With one hand, because I was fighting with one hand. So they come out, and I fought them. Because at the same time, I couldn't hit them. So I was forced to learn defense, because I wanted to live. And I know if I struck this guy, these guys around me had guns that I was going to die. So imagine having to fight under those kind of circumstances, where if you make a mistake, you die. Where if you hurt this person, you die. So therefore, it brought about the power of defense. In that situation, I won. I won because I didn't hurt him. And then from that point forth, the reputation went all over St. Louis. I fought with every gang. Every gang has their heavy hitter. I fought with lots of them. And because of that, God allowed me to move from the community centers after years of dealing with that type of violence to the Job Corps. And that when I went to Job Corps, I mean, there were gang fights. There were gang fights probably about every 2 or 3 months. You know, so it went from...
It almost feels to me like... I see things as a movie because I'm a screenwriter, but it almost seems to me that, like, at this stage of the movie, these enemies came to respect you and almost treat you like a challenge, like you're like a sporting event, like we're gonna like a gladiator, we're gonna send our guy in and you know, see if he can take you down. So like there's something
that's
really
right.
interesting about that kind of street respect, where it's like obviously if they really wanted to kill you, they could just shoot you.
They could kill me.
So
like, they could kill me easily.
You know, there's some sort of honor code where it's like, they're not going to shoot you, but it's almost like they're trying to see how far they can take it. I don't know. That's just really interesting to me.
What it is, it's fascinating. See, people have never seen anyone who have a relationship with God and can demonstrate that in combat. See, when you think about it like this, David and Goliath, was it David truly throwing that rock? Let me tell you like this. David could have tucked that rock and threw it straight up in the air, and it still would have hit Goliath. Because it wasn't David who was throwing the rock. It was God.
Well,
so
there's different schools of thought on that. There's different schools of thought
okay.
on that. And we won't get too far into it, but
okay.
there's a really good book called David versus Goliath. Malcolm Gladwell wrote it, where he makes an argument that David had the advantage. Because slingshots back then weren't like Dennis the Menace slingshots. It was this thing you spun super fast, and it was kind of like a bullet. So now you got like a sniper versus a giant infantryman who's got bad vision and doesn't know what the hell's going on and is laughing, and then all of a sudden, boom, he's dead. So like, I don't know. I'm not a very religious person, but I hear what you're saying. But I don't know. I don't want to detract it. But go ahead. What were you saying?
But see, the reality of it is, without morality, without humility, without that sense of I want to be a better person, you can't be a better fighter. So somewhere along the line, morality has to kick in. You call it whatever you call it. It doesn't, you know. I look at it like this. If you are doing good, you're kind, you're respectful, you're humble, then that is of God. If you are mean, you hurt people, it's of Satan.
Right.
And I have survived in this arena of combat because I don't hurt people. I don't hurt people. Whether my words or my combat. And so as a result, my existence in the martial art, you know, community grew, but not in the same way. I didn't fight in sporting arenas. I didn't put gloves on, man. I fought real people that were coming.
And you were
hurt
never
me.
Defeated. Like no one, like for real,
no one ever won.
No man
has ever put his fist on my body in 37 years.
You never even been punched.
Never been punched. In Raytown, I have tons of students who have watched people come to hurt me. People out of prison, people who come in and I beat them. And then after I beat them, they act like, oh, okay, thank you. Reach out to shake my hand and try to punch me in my face. So after they do something, like I don't want to hurt people, but after they do something like that, I will tell the guy, okay. Because, see, sometimes people think just because you're God-fearing that you're blind. So this guy, I went to shake his hand. He tried to punch me in my face. So I stepped back and I said, oh, okay. I said, you see that platform over there behind you? I'm going to take your neck over there and hang you off that platform, and I'm going to ask you one question. Do you want to die? See, this is the real world of martial arts. There ain't no ring where people got rules. You see, but not many martial arts teachers fight. They do choreographing. Not many teachers fight with their students. They don't fight with their students. They sell kicks and punches. I have been fighting for 37 years. And my defenses are tight because I grew. I learned not because I wanted to fight. I learned because I wanted to live.
Man.
I was sick. I was born with bad genetics. And I'm just thanking God every day that I have life. Because, you know, when you have, you know, that's what kept me training. But because of that, it made my fighting much better because I had a purpose. I didn't want to be a champion. I didn't want to be on TV. I just loved what I did, and I loved what I did for people. So, you know, but in terms of fire, yes, people come in my school, I beat them one-handed. You know why? Because I tell people, if you want to play and you want to challenge me without respect, I ask them also this question. I don't ask them, I tell them, which eyeball you want me to close, your left eyeball or your right one? Close your eyelid. And why? Because if you have two eyes and I take my finger and push one out of your head or destroy it, how many eyes you have left? One eye. Now, at that point, you have the decision to make. You can leave with that one eye, or you can leave like the three blind mice, but no sight. I know this sounds vicious, Nicole, but I haven't survived 37 years and 19 years in one location because I'm just friendly. I smile. When I beat these people, I'm not mad. I'm smiling. Matter of fact, I can
preach. Yeah, and that's what I find So that's what I found so weird and cool about your school, because I've been in and out of some martial arts, you know, dojos throughout my life, and I never got really serious about it, but I've tinkered around with it, and I've never felt like anything like I did there, where you have a guy here who, he like walks the walk, like anyone who comes in, like he's saying, like he'll fight them, and he's very warm-natured about it. Like, he's happy, he's having fun. But at the same time, like, you get the impression, like, this guy could kill me. I mean, just because you did it to kind of just show me, because it's a show-me state, and maybe you could sense that I was like, this guy's probably full of shit. Because, like, when you say something like, I've never been hit in 37 years, and it's worth me mentioning, he didn't, like, ask to come on my show. He didn't. I invited him, so there's nothing in it for him in terms of, like, trying to play up an image. I'm the one who got him to do this.
I'm not talking about it, because it's hard.
Yeah, well, and, like, when I came in there, he showed me, like, what he could do. He's like, go ahead, you know, try to hit. And then it was just game over. Like, everything I even tried. And he had me fight a 17-year-old kid. Who, you know, I wasn't trying to hurt him, but I was, you know, I was trying to hit him. I was like, let's see if this guy's, like, really, he's a 17-year-old kid. He's not, like, I looked like I would kick his ass, I think. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I hear you good now.
Okay.
I hear you good.
So, yeah, I was just saying that the kid that you had me, you were just like, hey, if you're comfortable with it, you know, why don't you guys fight? And I was just like, okay. And there's the 17-year-old kid who does not look threatening. You know, and I look like I pride myself in being like as good shape as possible. Like, I think that on paper it would look like I would whoop this guy's ass if I felt like it. But you know, I couldn't touch him. It was the same thing. It was like I don't know how I would have hit that guy. Like, if no matter what, like the way you teach it, and there was nothing dangerous about it. That's the weird thing. It's like you get the impression that it's lethal. But at the same time, you get the impression you're safe because of, like, the attitude everyone has where it's like a community. I don't know. It's hard to describe, but I've never seen anything like that where I both thought that this was a real deal, and I felt like, you know, no one's going to get hurt here. I don't know. It was weird. That's what makes me want to pursue this.
Yeah, you're right. They don't get hurt because I protect them. See, when people used to come, they don't come anymore because they know there's a lot to lose. And you're not going to lose a fight. You may lose a testicle or lose an eyeball. Or, you know, when you hit telephone poles, I don't have to hit the body. I can hit the arm, and the arm will swell. Or the leg, and the leg will swell. But it's not about destruction. So when people come in to learn, a lot of martial arts people have very big difficulty because they have egos that have been fostered by destruction and offense. Well, when people come in my school, I tie their hands. I make them focus on defense. So what happens in a single class, you may have 300 punches coming at your head. Now you multiply that by two classes. That's 600 punches coming through your head. So you imagine 600 punches, 4 day, 8 day, 8 classes out of a month. Now imagine that. That's 2,400 punches coming at your head in a month. So over time, you get comfortable, start to calm down defensively. But it's hard to teach combat if you don't know combat. So a lot of the schools are just, and they're just teaching form. I call them cotton schools because I ask people, what does your belt mean? Well, in our school, if you're a yellow belt, that means you can stop hand attack. Now, keep in mind, Nico, when you were fighting with him, he didn't hurt you, But many times he had his hand on your throat. That kid could have killed you in that school because the throat can't take much impact. The throat cannot take much impact. That's why MMA people are not allowed to strike the throat. MMA people are not allowed to strike the groin. You know why? Because if there were no rules, the fight would last.
Fight's over.
But people want to be entertained at the expense of these kids and getting head injuries, and nobody's going to be able to pay their bills. Don't get me wrong. I respect the MMA. I respect the conditioning, the mental attitude. I respect the determination.
Right, but that's a sport, and what you're doing is something very different. I want to talk real quick about. Let me tell you guys about something else that happened while I was at the school. So I don't know how far you'll want to get into this, but I'm assuming you're comfortable talking about it. I was talking to one of your students while you were in your office. And this is a guy who looks like a gangster, right? He's got like the grill in his mouth. He's like, he looks like someone you would think is like a drug dealer or something. This guy, he was like a sweetheart when I was talking to him. It was weird, like these people look dangerous, extremely polite. Like, he kind of got on me for, like, saying a curse word. That's how nice the guy was. But I was telling him about the program, about Tripolar, and about how kind of my, philosophy or idea I'm trying to put out there is that people, especially people with mood disorders like me who are prone to act on emotions that maybe aren't appropriate, finding a way to distance yourself from that and detach to the point where you can make an objective decision is kind of like the overall aim, if I were to really sum it up. And he was like, you'd be interested in Master Lee's meditation technique. And he's like, because when Master Lee fights, he uses energy. And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, well, he uses energy while he fights. I don't understand. Like Dragon Ball Z or something? I was laughing, but he wasn't laughing. He was just like, well, yeah, he's like, watch this. And that guy punches out a candle from a foot away. And I was like, I'm a huge skeptic, so I don't know. Maybe it's just you get really good at figuring out how to push the wind on it. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, this guy punched out a candle that he wasn't planning on doing. It wasn't like a magic show I attended. He just whipped out a candle and did it. And he said that you can do it from 2 feet away. And that, to me, that's bizarre because it doesn't seem like it should be possible. But I witnessed something and it was done pretty casually. So could you talk about that idea, that the Dragon Ball Z stuff, like I called it?
Well, it's when I started training, I trained in internal arts folks, Qigong, they call it, and meditation. And what Qigong does, it elevates and maintains the white blood cells in the body. You're spending, just like a runner spends hours running, he builds his cardio up, he builds his endurance up. But the difference is, a runner breathes from the top of his lung down. What I teach through meditation is how the student to breathe from the bottom of the lung up, which means that when you breathe that deeply, you expand the lung capacity and you expand your ability to absorb energy. And energy, when I say energy, that every living thing has energy. I won't go into details of meditation, but I will say this. I have suffered much, and I would not be living if it wasn't for my internal training. People look at my kicks and punches, and they think, wow, well, guess what? That is not the most powerful system I teach. The most powerful system is the internals, the Qigong. This is what allows me to fight at 57 years old. I'll be 57 in January. But this allows me to do things and to heal quicker. So when I say Qi, you learn how to direct your mind. First, to learn how to project Qi, you have to calm your mind. But calming your mind in meditation is one thing. But having your mind calmed in combat is another. And what you get from the crane is how to control your body movements, meaning that to move slow sounds easy, but it's not. So you spend years of moving slow and years of breathing. The lung is like a muscle, and every time you use it internally, it expands, and it gets stronger over time. So your healing ability gets quicker. your intuitive ability. In other words, in Qigong, they have cavities, the crown, the upper dantian. The upper dantian is the area between the eyebrows. Well, once you start activating your internal ability, that area opens, which allows you to see things in slower.
Is that the third eye thing people talk about?
Yes, that's the third eye thing they talk about, yes. But to cultivate that in combat, it requires a lifestyle, meaning that you can't be a kung fu man today and a rapper tomorrow. You have to stay consistent in terms of what you want to do and the method which you do, and you have to have systems like eating and stretching and pumping iron and doing all these lifestyle things. And when you do those things, the body becomes healthier and you build more energy. So when I fight, I can fight and talk and have a conversation. And I can, I don't have to engage my mind because I'm using energy. And the energy I'm using is to be able to, if I touch your hand, I can feel your intent. If I touch the hair on your arm, you lose. Because you cannot move your arm without the hair on your arm moving. So the internal arch enhances sensitivity. That means I can touch and feel your movement before you move, which makes me, like you said, I think I'm two or three steps ahead of you in combat.
It's like you're almost like psychic at that point.
Well, it's called muscle memory. Muscle memory. Your body reacts. It doesn't think. It doesn't think. It doesn't need to think. I can fight and have a conversation with you, Nico. I can fight, and you can still do the interview.
You're
and I can
on
answer
the next level. and something else that's really cool about like your fighting technique was, and this is what's weird about it, is he'll just stand there totally still, like smiling, and be like, okay, try to hit me. You know, because you're taught a defensive position. Like, that's how I was fighting, like a boxer stance, you know, holding your hands up, trying to protect your face, like your leading foot pointed towards the target. But with him, it's like he intentionally makes himself a completely, like what is apparently a completely wide open target, and doesn't even like look at what you're doing, as weird as that sounds. It's almost like he's just like sensing your motion, and now he sees like what your move is, and now he knows like what he's gonna do as soon as you do it. That was like what I felt like you were doing when you were kind of messing with me.
And that's it. And I have fought people 500 pounds, 6'6", Samoan. I have fought martial arts people from every style. But there's one thing that is true and consistent. If you cannot defend, you will lose quick. And that means that no matter how much power you have, you're not going to walk into my school with a cup on, a throat guard, and eye goggles. That means something's going to be open. And when you are fighting a fighter that you know can kill you with one blow, that means that you got to be a little bit more mindful. And then the worst part of it, when you're an old man with a head full of gray hair and you're happy to fight and you're smiling, that should give room for thought. In other words, I was beating masters. I was beating masters in closing schools while 90% of the instructors in this area wasn't even eggs in their mama's belly. So for anyone to come to Raytown to challenge me, they got to be crazy or looking to learn or looking to be hurt.
Right.
Because
or both.
It's not like I'm going to say, okay, well, I'm going to go into the back office, call the police.
Right.
And I sure ain't running outside the school talking about help.
Right. Now, do you enjoy those type of challenges? Because it seems like you do. Like, would you invite, like, if someone's listening and a guy could beat them up, would you, like, want that guy to show up and just, do you enjoy the sport of it? Or is it just, like, when you have to do it, you do it?
Let me say it like this. I am passionate about what I do. I love life, and I just want to live. I don't want trouble with anyone. But if someone wants to come and beat me up, I'm not going to say, please, no. I'm not going to say,
you can say, please do.
If they want to come and beat me up, you know what I'm going to be doing? I'm going to be singing hallelujah. thank you, Jesus, because I'm getting ready to baptize this one. And that means that when they leave this school, when they leave that school, they ain't going to be the same, not ever again, because they're going to realize all that martial arts they've been trained to punch and kick, or worse yet, you see these martial arts players, people who can break boards with their legs. But guess what? A person ain't going to stand still. Or you see these people in China who brace while they kick them in their groins. Well, guess what? You ain't going to get a chance to brace in combat. You ain't going to get a chance to stand still. Combat is mobility.
That's kind of like it's all sizzle, no steak, basically.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. You know, so to walk into a school where a man fights with no gloves, no protection, no ring, no rules, and on concrete.
Right.
That's a lot to think about. In other words, I've had challenges where, you know, where people called me, and I don't go mess with anyone. I'm the one being challenged, and I'm the one they come to. Mm-hmm. And when they come, I'm happy because I know I didn't do anything wrong. I know I didn't provoke anyone. So mm-hmm. I feel just. So when I have a challenge, and for example, I had one challenge. I ain't going to go into any names about schools, but anyway, the challenge, he wouldn't stop when I struck him. He kept coming. So I had to step back and ask this young man. I said, sir, do you have a job? He said, yes. I said, do you have children at home? He said, yes. I said, do you have a wife at home? He said, yes. I said, well, the next time I strike your throat and you don't stop, I'm going to take one of those eyeballs and you're not going to have use. And you won't be able to see your child with two eyeballs ever again. So that's real world combat. See, when you can spend years on defense, years trying to teach people how not to hurt people, years on trying to teach people how to be protected, how to feel comfortable. You know, God smiles on you when you don't destroy his people. You see my point? So my power doesn't come from man. It comes from a higher power. But at the same time, nobody wants to walk in my shoes. I have suffered greatly. Not just, you know, and I'm not going into detail, but I have suffered much to do what I do and to be what I am and to help people like the Lord has allowed me to. But anyway,
yeah, and you showed me more details on that. But yeah, it's true. He's been through some crazy shit, like just health-wise, physically, which maybe if we do another episode at some point, we could get into that kind of stuff deeper because that's a whole another arena we could talk. And I think you and I have a lot in common in terms of some of the, things we couldn't control about our own minds that we had to suffer through. But as a result, we were maybe like almost like endowed with at least the propensity to do things other people couldn't, I think.
Well, in other words, I have my shortcomings and I'm broken. And that's why I train. I'm not trying to be champion. I don't want to be on TV.
Right.
I'm not interested. I just want to live. And see, when you've been down,
you're still a student. And I think that's something that I want the listeners to take away is that people who are really masters of something, we have a tendency in life to, I think we're almost like programmed to learn a certain amount of things that we need to get by, and that locks in, that solidifies like cement, and we go on with our life. But I think true masters never let that cement solidify. They're always learning and absorbing and being aware, and never being completely content with their current ability. And I think that I observed that with you, where it seems like that's why you have so much vitality and enjoy this so much, is that you're always learning as you're teaching, was the impression I get. And I don't know, could you speak to that? Am I correct in saying that?
That's absolutely correct. In other words, the key to mastery is redundancy. Every time I teach a new student, it's like going over my own materials, like review of my own skills. But if you're not passionate about teaching, it's like a pond in the middle of the desert. It's going to dry up, and they're going to quit. So that's why most black belts you see from other martial arts systems, they don't fight because they don't have the lifestyle, and they don't have the same passion. See, when you have a skill that's offensive, and the end result is people getting hurt, it's not as fun, especially when you're getting hurt too. But when you're learning a martial arts system where you don't have to hurt people, and you don't have to get hurt, and you can actually fight good. I mean, what better way to have it?
Right. Everybody well, walk away. That any, yeah, that, that's like a way of thinking that I believe anyone can apply to anything that they're trying to master. Just this idea that redundancy is completely necessary, and I've never something I don't really like about our education system is you get a certificate at a certain point, and it's like, okay, now I'm smart. If I didn't finish that last class, then I'm not smart. But if I did, I get it, and now I'm smart. But that's kind of bullshit. It's like you to really be a master of something, you are never done learning. You're just furthering that tradition. And you're just a link in that chain, right?
You're never done. You're never done. Yeah. I pray every day just to be able to get up and to be able to help someone to feel better. Because I know that's where my blessings come from. And I know, and I'm not selling religion. Because what you do is what you do. Right. I do is I don't try to tell people how to live. I just want to live. And I try to be the best example. I don't make religion a conversation, and we don't even talk about it. Because the best way to express your morality is in your behavior. If you are kind and you are good and hard, what more needs to be said? So that's pretty much
exactly.
It.
It's like the show me state. You know, it's like you... And there's Bible verses that say when you speak the words of God, use words when I forget the verse. It's like when you're preaching the word, use words if necessary. I'm butchering it, but that's the idea is that you're demonstrating it, you're living it, and people who listen to this know I am by no means a religious person. I am extremely skeptical. I'm very critical of a lot of things that have to do with religion. But in your case, I see something that you have that I don't have, that something about the universe and about yourself that you understand that I don't get yet. And so that's why I feel this curiosity that I'm going to follow. And that's what he's saying. And I think that anyone who's trying to, because I'm a salesman too, anyone who's trying to sell something, you don't have to sell it if it's great. You know, like if it's working, people will look at that and say, hey, can I get in on that? Like, what's that about? So, and by the same vein, like if you have to work too hard to sell it, let's look at the product again. If it's so hard to get anyone to care about it or you're getting angry and frustrated and pounding your head against the wall trying to convince someone to care about something and believe what you believe. And like, no, why would they? It's like if you are demonstrating something that they have a desire for, that's when you're selling your product, you're convincing people to join your lifestyle, your X, Y, this, that, and the other. Like, that's when you're getting that result is when you're living it, and just by being it, people are intrigued.
It's called measurable results. You cannot produce measurable results if you don't have good systems. And if you don't have good systems, you're not going to be able to demonstrate your skills or the effectiveness. So that's why you see martial art teachers who just teach. Well, me, I like fighting. Why? Because I don't have to hurt people. Hurting is an option for me. It's not something I have to do. In my early days, I hurt people because I didn't know what I had. But what I found out that when you under attack and you hurt people and you really didn't need to hurt them, you don't feel good. If you have morality, if you are, you don't feel good, even though you know you are being attacked. So I found out young in my training that when I hurt people, I felt worse. I felt bad. So I asked the Lord to show me how to fight without hurting people. So as a result, not only did I learn good self-defense, he improved my accuracy because of that humility, that desire to not hurt people. He gave me power.
That actually made you more powerful.
They gave me the power of defense. And so therefore, God protects me. People don't hurt me because I try to do good. I try to produce good in people. So So God protect right. me. I mean, how can you explain fighting 37 years and no one put their fist on your body? I can go
you
through
can't.
A whole
no,
lot
I
of
thought you were lying, but now I believe you.
You can't. Yeah. And I would be a fool. I would be a fool to be on radio talking this. You know, because you
right.
know, I mean, I would be crazy. You know,
yeah.
but I talk this because many people know. It's not like I'm just a quiet. You know, I mean, I'm quiet, but I mean, you can't survive 37 years and no one know about you. You know, there are people
right.
out there who know about my reputation, and they know I don't hurt people. So people don't come to challenge me because they know that I try. I'm not trying to hurt people. I'm trying to do good. So if you come to my school and challenge me, you're not only going to lose a fight. You're going to lose something much greater, which is respect, which is your sense of righteousness. You want to be on the side of right. So what? I can be joyful because, one, I don't do demonstrations. I'm not trying to sell anything. I take joy in helping my kids to grow. I got kids that started when they're 5 and now they're 31 and got their kids training. I got kids trained that their father's trained.
Yeah.
So
that's how you
so
know
that's
it's good.
Much.
Well,
yeah
and let's tie a bow on this because I know we only got a few, like 15 minutes left, and I'm going to wrap it up sooner because I know you wanted to do, you told me you could only do a half hour. It's been almost an hour and a half. So I want to make a point with that, actually. So something I've come to find, and you might find this interesting, is that I don't let obstacles deter me. I don't let the apparent rules deter me. It's something that I've learned that has made me, I'm not successful yet, but that will make me successful. For example, you know, tonight he told me he could only talk for a half hour. And I knew that probably wouldn't be enough for an episode. But I didn't complain because I knew once we started talking, it would get interesting. He would lose track of time. And before you know it, it's been like 15 hours, you know, and now I got plenty to work with. So, you know, that to me is kind of a lesson in that there's so many things in life that if you look at the facts or what you think the facts are, what the rules are, what people tell you, and you say, oh, okay, and turn around and you don't do it, you're never gonna make it. You're never going to make it further than the people who told you you can't do that will. And so I don't know if this is kind of a weird point I'm trying to make at the end, but I like this idea that when people tell you one thing, or even when your senses tell you one thing or whatever, if you feel deep down that there's something there, that you could walk across that ocean, you know, a bridge is probably going to form when you start walking that way, if you're confident and you just go for it. So I think there's some virtue in that fate. I don't know if that ties in well. Maybe I'll just edit it out. But I like that idea that everything that I do as an artist, as a writer, I don't know what the hell is going to happen when I start doing it. I just have this faith in myself that I have an ability for whatever reason, and I'm going to use it. And then I look back, and I'm like, oh, wow, look at that. I can't believe I made that, you know?
And that's how I teach fine.
Yeah, right. And I can tell. And that's what I like about you is that you're not the type of person who is bound by any certain school of thought or any certain, you're open, and you act on something deeper than I think most people operate on a day-to-day level, and that's got to be linked in with your abilities to meditate and access this deeper part of yourself. But anyways, you know, we could talk forever about this, and I hope we'll do another episode at some point, but I'm intrigued. I'm going to do some training with you. Let's plug your school, so if other people want to join in, they can. Tell everybody like where your school is. If you want, you
okay.
might find 300 people show up on Monday. Be careful.
No, we in Raytown, 9909 East 63rd. I give a free class. Nico was saying, I don't have to sell it. It sells itself. It is what it is, and it's no shortcuts. So my website is lcmakc.com. My Facebook, The Lee's Chinese Martial Arts. I have videos. I have lots of words of wisdom. So you can do your research and stop by. Don't need an announcement. And you can watch a class or participate. Thank you. Nico has been great.
Yeah, and I'll link to both of those things on the website so people will be able to just click it.
Okay.
But yeah, thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's been a late night for you, and this is going to reach a lot of people, I think, in time, and who knows, all over the world, and people are going to take things from this that are going to affect their life. I like to think that are going to change the world in some way. And so thank you so much for contributing to this thing and for sharing your story and spreading that wisdom.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, Nico. And maybe down the road later, we'll do something like this, because it's a mission. We have a message. We don't have to hurt each other to learn from each other. All right?
Right.
I'll leave you with that.
I like it. All right. Well, yeah, thanks. And I'll see you in class next week then.
See you next week. All right. Good deal. Thank you. Bye.
Have a great night.
You too, Nico. Bye-bye.
All right, so there we have it. This has been, a very different episode. And what I like about the show is I can take it anywhere. There are no rules. I'm an extremely skeptical person, as I've hinted, and I pride myself in not falling for bullshit. But this guy is on to something. I believe that the stories he told, and there's even weirder stuff that he's kind of shared with me that we didn't get into, and maybe we will in future episodes if he does come on again. But, yeah, I think that if you be quiet, I'm recording still. Hey, Mom, Dad, I'm recording right now. Can you be quiet? Just finishing it. It's okay. So as a final recap, I almost killed a guy the other week because I was acting on something dark inside of me. So to wrap things up, I almost killed the guy the other week. The other day. So, to wrap this episode up, I almost killed a guy a few days ago. And I'm glad I didn't. There was something very dark within me that wanted that and felt justified in that. And wish that had been the outcome. But I'm finding that for us to move forward as individuals and on a larger scale, as communities and even as countries, civilizations, we have to find a way to take these emotions we have, these instincts, these reactive forces within us, and to press pause. And to zoom out and to look at it from a more compassionate perspective. And doing so is not only a nice thing to do, doing so may be necessary for our survival. As Master Lee demonstrated through his stories, his mercy, his ability to stop himself from killing, wounding, XYZ people, got him respect. And it prevented worse things from happening to him. It prevented retaliation. And I really like that metaphor I came up with during the episode, where violence is a pong ball bouncing back and forth between the parties in question. It has that force, and that force will be returned. It's like a natural law. That is the way it goes. Violence begets violence. those who live by the sword die by the sword. There's so many references to what I just said in history and literature. But what happens when you grab that ball and you hold it and you don't throw it back? Well, that changes the equation. The other side is no longer justified in throwing more balls at you. And they might not want to. So am I a pacifist? Fuck no. I still would have shot that guy if he came at me, bro. But there was no need to do that. And there was no need to seek that violence. And there was certainly no need to feel entitled to it or to desire it. Violence should only be used when absolutely necessary. And when it is used, it should be used fully. And that's my belief. Or it shouldn't be used at all. And so, I don't know if that's a good takeaway, if that's a good lesson, if that's what, I don't know what it is, but what I do know is that I could have ended a life the other day. And that would have ended a life. And all of the good that could have come from that life. And it would have changed my life dramatically. But by not acting on that ego, not putting myself in that position where it could have been him or me, or we could have both wound up in very bad shape, crisis averted. So it can be that simple. It can be just defense. Just defend. And the key to defense is evasion. So when you don't have to face a conflict head on, when that's not the only option, I'm thinking right now maybe about our recent deal with Iran. I have no personal involvement in that, but I like that they reached a diplomatic solution, even though these guys hate each other. I liked it they didn't send B-2s to bomb the facilities and, you know, a big, you know, potentially a huge war didn't break out. Because it didn't have to. Now, if it does have to, it will. But it didn't have to. And the proof of that is the lack of explosions. So, I don't know. I hope that you get something out of this episode. I might just edit out the end. I don't like how it's ending right now. But, yeah. So, basically, don't be violent unless you gotta be violent. There's no harm in, there's no shame, I should say. There's no shame in ducking punches and in avoiding the blows. And in fact, when you do so and you don't return violence, that diffuses the situation generally. So try to do that in your day-to-day life, please. Everyone around the world, try to be cool. Try to not hit each other. Try to not shoot missiles at each other. Try to not fight. Let's be cool. All right, guys? And if everybody's cool, maybe we can move forward with our lives. All right. This has been Tripolar. Bye.